I am in a neighborhood, Rob, that, and I mentioned this yesterday, when there is a breeze, when somebody sneezes the wrong way, we lose power.
We never lost power growing up, and we had our share of bad weather. Now it's just, well, everything's just built to break it.
Yeah, I think so many more people on the grid, too. I think somehow it has an effect.
And not to mention a grid that hasn't been updated since the Ford administration.
I will say that I was downstairs watching the Thursday night football game, and I go up right before halftime, and you can hear the rain a lot more when you're upstairs, obviously, because you're closer to the roof. And then I did hear the wind starting to howl a little bit, almost like a whistle. And I was like, uh-oh. But it was raining pretty heavy when I went to bed last night. In fact, I thought it had stopped raining when I woke up in the middle of the night because it was raining so much lighter.
You sound like that person they interviewed after a tornado. Sound like a freight train.
Yeah, it did.
Choo-choo!
Yeah, man. Well,
but driving in this morning, I honestly thought we were going to get heavy, heavy winds at 3 or 4 in the morning. Did not. It does look like it'll be here in an hour or so, or maybe two, and then once the rain is out around noon, they are expecting some heavy winds for a couple hours.
Wind's going to just blow it out up into South Carolina, I guess.
Which is good. It'll blow off that grass at Truist.
It's actually going the other way, Rob, which has been a concern. Yeah, it's going northwest, which is
Tennessee?
Nuts. It's like headed towards like Nashville area and then Kentucky, which is the only reason I say that is because I think it's important for a lot of people that if it's going through Nashville, that those storms don't circle back around to Tuscaloosa and Alabama tomorrow.
Right.
And a lot of people got their eyes on that as well. And obviously want people to stay safe, but that's one of the reasons I've tracked it northwest because it's not typically moving northeast.
Wait, hold on a second. You've tracked it northwest.
Meteorologist Mike Johnson.
Do you have a radar screen at home that you're...
I've been just keeping an eye on what I think this weather's going to do because of all the sports-related stuff and everything we talk about, man. So,
I'm sorry. I wasn't meaning to be a jerk, but you're like, that's one of the reasons why, Rob, I have tracked it northwest.
It is funny. It is funny.
You went weatherman
like
mode.
But we do have I am now talking to a guy that gives himself credit for everything in here. So it is funny that I can't say I'm tracking the storm, right? So there we go.
I'm sorry, by the way, no, Dylan, you gotta pull that. Pull that where he goes, that's one of the reasons, Rob, why I have tracked it northwest. At the Mike's Mafia headquarters of the weather team.
I remember back in the day, remember old Ken Cook at Fox 5?
I remember Ken Cook and his mustache, too.
You knew it was something, though, if he's in the weather office with his jacket off and his sleeves rolled up. He's going to work for you.
Was it me or...
It's like we can't pull you away from the desk long enough to do this, so
no,
we're just going to do
urgent.
It right here.
Can't do it.
Just turn around and look over my shoulder.
Didn't Ken Cook look like he might have been on a Spanish boat, maybe exploring the Americas back in the 1500s?
Went to college with his daughter in West Georgia. She was really cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't even know
Fun
that.
Girl.
I didn't know that he had a daughter our age. I remember when he retired.
Yep.
It doesn't feel like it was that long ago, honestly.
And we have Linda Stouffer, anchoring action, who's always been a big fan of her. Back when her name used to be Cinnamon Stouffer when she was at CNN.
I remember Karen Mitten.
Yep.
I was a Karen Mitten.
She was
Mitten
always
fan.
Pregnant. Karen Mitten was pregnant for 25 years when she was on the air, it seemed like.
Not even going to follow up on that. I'm just going to let it go. So they might play baseball tonight.
I think they're likely going to play baseball tonight. Yeah, this stuff's moving out. So
there we go.
Braves and Royals, big series this weekend.
I think the wind, too, is going to help. You know, that's one of the things playing a lot of golf these days. Whenever there's wind after rain, you always feel good about it because it will just disperse that water and make it, you know, get the puddles out of there. Looks like Max Fried's going tonight against the Royals. What do you think about this strategy that they're using, guys, where I guess they're going to kind of save Chris Sale for when they think that when it could be an elimination.
And believe me,
game.
Chris Sale had some input in that too.
I believe that as well.
Of course he did.
Yeah, no, and we talked about it yesterday. It's like, man, is it fair to, you know, kind of keep these guys hanging on and approach them on the day of a game, right? Or on the morning of a game or after the game the night before and say, okay, you're up. And I was like, man, I don't know if that's fair or not. You kind of split the middle if you're Snit, right? You kind of did a little bit of both. It's like, I'm going to tell all these guys when they're pitching, except you, Chris Sale, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to prepare you that you're going to go whenever we freaking need you.
And
so
plus,
I love
if you're facing like an elimination, all hands on deck.
Always.
So. Well, I do believe that Max Fried went in and said, I just assume stay on regular rest. Remember, he was the one guy that every time he was approached by the media or asked about the media with the six-man kind of the six-day rotation or six-man rotation, whatever you want to phrase it, he always said, yeah, I kind of like going every fifth day. It's kind of my habit, and I enjoy staying in my routine, which I have no issue with.
No, he's also trying to optimize what his outing could potentially be because, you know, he's going to be looking for a contract, probably from the Dodgers.
Don't underestimate the Mets' spending power.
Yeah. I also heard Orioles, yeah. A couple of people.
And Grant
put
said
out,
yesterday the Dodgers have dumped a lot of money in their starting pitching. So.
Well, not only that, you played Ohtani and yeah. everybody else.
Right.
I was going to say they got a Cy Young Award winner or Mookie potential Betts. Cy Young winner coming back right. next year from Tommy John.
Yeah. But, Max Fried will not be here next year.
No. Well, no. And if you, it's nice to hold on to the hope. But when people tell you how they do business or who they are, if you don't listen, it's on you. And they have told you, this team has told you, no one will defend Alex Anthopoulos as much as me.
And he appreciates that, too.
But what he's told you, Rob, I'm sure it does, but what he's told you is when a guy gets to free agency, he will not meet that market value that they're going to get. And market value as a free agent and a guy that's closed out a World Series and been dominant like Max Fried has is going to tell you he's going to get paid top dollar, just like Dansby and Freddie did.
And plus, Max Fried has his injury history as well, and that's going to throw a wrench into the negotiations in a lot of ways, as far as Alex Anthopoulos goes.
I don't know that it will. I mean,
I think it totally does.
But it's just funny to me, you look around guys there's guys that have come off Tommy John. Heck, we talked about the Dodgers. Which one's the Dodgers pitcher that hadn't even thrown for them this year? So
Shohei Ohtani is one of the guys.
Well, that's a good point, too. But, you know, you talk about some of the players that are coming off injuries and doing other things. It just, if you can pitch, you can pitch. You're going to make a lot of money. It just... And going back to it, too, I do love the fact that he has basically told Chris Sale that you're going to go in the high-leverage situation. His demeanor, and we talked to Smoltz about this the other day, because his demeanor is a lot like John Smoltz, mm-hmm. right? He's kind of got that Max Scherzer just bulldog mentality about right. him on the mound, right. which is awesome to watch. So I think if you're a Braves fan and you're lining up, and obviously there's some good options, but you're lining up Chris Sale with that bulldog mentality to go in that game with everything on the line, it's going to be nice to watch.
And I saw the narrative already being pushed, and I think it was from last night, and said, and I think it's interesting and always important to put the, you know, talk about all these things. Well, they don't make the playoffs, and Sale doesn't get to pitch in a meaningful game again. They're going to be second guessed. And I just sat there and I thought about it for a second, and I go, no. They're really not, because I think when you look back on this season, you're going to say, hold on a second, the Braves lost Riley for a quarter of the season. They lost Albies for at one point a quarter of the season. They lost Acuna for almost the entire season. They lost this guy. They lost Spencer Strider for the entire season. They lost so-and-so for Michael Harris for over a quarter of the season.
Well, Kranick, the pitching coach.
Yeah, he's been gone.
Whatever issues he has, he's been gone.
I think some family stuff maybe. I don't want to speculate, but I know there's family issues. I remember hearing
the reason.
The
absurdity of it when he's not even around, too.
Yeah, and I think they're going to say, and you're telling me they – and then they had a weather issue that cost them days in a pivotal series. And you're going to tell me they went into the final five games and they had a chance to make it and they decided to make a decision that the pitcher was in on? No. No one's going to say that. No one is going to question that. What they're going to say is, what a phenomenal job by this front office and coaching staff to get them to this point.
And the cast-offs, too, the rejects. Mm-hmm. Credit to them for coming in, at least keeping the ship above water. All right, we're going to come back. The battle of battered offensive lines will... culminate on Sunday at 1 o'clock inside Mercedes-Benz. Falcons Saints preview coming up next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, morganandmorgan.com. Well, you want to know what the definition of a rivalry is? Well, you play every year. There's a lot of vitriol, and it's been competitive. Sunday's going to be the 111th meeting between the Falcons and Saints. The Saints have won 55. The Falcons have won 55, gentlemen. So there
blow
you go.
For blow
blow for blow.
Heavyweight titans going at it in the history of
last
football.
Last man standing. Loser leaves town.
The most grand franchises in the history of the NFL.
And also battered offensive lines, too.
Yeah, that's what worries me. A guy I wanted last year in the draft, Brian Brzee from Clemson.
Yes.
I think he's a hell of a player. He's obviously a good kid. He's dealt with some stuff in college with
his sister. Passed away. Yeah.
Yeah. He's what he and Carl Granderson worry me in this game. I know that obviously, you know, Cam Jordan has been that guy for a long time. He's obviously maybe lost a little bit, but their defensive line is sneaky good. I think you can run on their defensive line, but when it comes back to pass rush, that they worry me up front. I think it's going to be interesting to me how you can run the ball without Drew Dahlman in the game and Caleb McGarry. If you can still effectively run Mike on them and neutralize in any way that their pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny because, you know, whoever starts at right tackle is going to have to deal with Cameron Jordan. And, you know, he kind of slides in and out and does a number of different things. Kind of like we talked about Chris Jones, but I don't think to that quite extent. But, you know, it's funny. We turn on film, Rob, this morning, and the first third down, we're like, oh, where's Cam Jordan? He's not in there. It's Granderson and Chase Young that are rushing the passer.
That was the third down, right?
Yeah, that was third down. So it was just it's interesting to see how they've, you know, continued to utilize him as he's gotten a little longer in the tooth. He's definitely a heck of a football player still, but much in the way that you would have seen like Calais used here last year, he kind of caps that tackle, you know, to the tight end side and doing over different things, but still a good player. But you're right. I think Carl Granderson is he's the dude-io. Like, you know, when we highlight with TJ Watt and whoever else on these defenses and say, man, that's the guy. Granderson's the straw that stirs the drink, and I think that's one of the guys you have to have your eyes on if you're Atlanta and you're having these offensive line injuries.
Well, what about the Saints? Oh, Eric McCoy's out, their best O lineman, and you know they're running the ball very well until he went out. Now they're averaging about 3 yards a carry since he's been gone, so that's had an effect on him.
That's where I want to see David Onyemata kind of be that guy, and I know that he and Eddie Goldman can they stuff the middle there with that run. And obviously Grady Jarrett, I mean, do you run more stunts this week, Mike? Do you kind of try to abuse that? Maybe Grady coming in and running a stunt, kind of moving in there and attacking McCoy? Because what they've done is they've moved Lucas Patrick inside, and then we saw last week, and I'm sure it's probably going to be a similar plan, and he's going to be the guy that moves into left guard.
Nice job.
And I know I finally got it. It only took me 5 days.
Oladu.
Nice. But and I literally have to look at the phonetic spelling, phonetically how it's spelled or as pronounced, like to get that word out.
Do his full name though, Olasemeka.
Well, you just did it for me.
Olasemeka.
Yeah, Semeka.
Olasemeka.
Odo. Oh, anyway, so now we've stopped because doing names, but the reality of the situation is what mismatches can we create inside? Could maybe Zach Harrison have an impact this week because of that?
Well, and he's so interesting to me because it's like I've mentioned you a couple times, we don't have much length. You know, it's not just size. We don't have much length, and that leads to leverage, right? When you have length, you have leverage. It's much in the way if I wanted to go, you know, tell you to push the door open, you're not going to stand up straight and hit it with your chest. You lean into it and get nice leverage and get flat to the ground and everything else. So he is an intriguing part of this entire ordeal, and obviously you have not been good against the run the last few weeks.
27th on the run, yeah.
Yeah, and it's bad. So it's weird because Bo and I talked about this, Rob. I honestly find our defense up front to be a lot like the offense has been, you know, or at least was in week one. It's almost very vanilla, and you're still kind of figuring out what your defense can do and can't do. Now, the great equalizer in run defense is when you have undersized guys. And look no further, like if you were if you were watching Georgia-Kentucky a couple weeks ago, Kentucky did a good job of this. You start moving side to side. It's the great equalizer. Like, I'm not going to sit here. If I'm not 6'5 and 320, I'm not going to sit here and try to stand up to these double teams. So you do start moving a little more side to side. And I think that's one of the intriguing things that are probably at the fingertips of Jimmy Lake in this defense. I don't know that they go to that yet, and I don't think that they change much of what they're doing. I think they want to settle into some of these division games and see how they do against this style of offense before they start making changes like run stunts and other things. But I think you do have to start sprinkling that in because I don't think you have those guys right now up front that are just going to simply squat on a double team other than Eddie Goldman. But he's not a three-down player. So.
And one thing I saw that impressed me last week, and it's the first time I've seen all year this guy kind of flash, it was Taquan Graham. Yeah. I saw multiple times last week, and that's a good offensive line. Look, I know that Kansas.
Well, he blew up a couple of plays. He got penalized on the second one.
But yeah, hold on a second. That was a terrible call.
Yeah,
that wasn't defensive holding. How do you call it again? He beat a double team on that play. He wasn't. And the refs were garbage last night, too, in that game.
I was just happy to see him flash, though.
But I was, too, and that's a good offensive line. I know we talked about Wanye Morris coming in for the rookie, Kingsley Sumate. But Juwan Taylor, I'm not a big fan, but because of what he did at Florida, he was always a penalty. But Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, and Joe Tooney, those are really good interior offensive linemen. I thought T.Q. Graham played well against last week.
Yeah, I did too, and he started to flash. And you talk about length; he actually is probably one of the longer guys. He's listed at 6'4". There's a couple of guys on this defensive roster that we have that I don't agree with, like, half their heights. There's just no freaking way. All right, you're not going to tell me that Eddie Goldman is 6'3" and that Zach Harrison's 6'5". Like, that's not a 2-inch height difference, bro. Like, there's just no way. David Onyemata's not 6'4". Let's just throw that out there too. You got Grady Jarrett listed at 6', and David Onyemata's 6'4". No, it's not.
No, I'm saying Grady Jarrett.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his is definitely accurate. Grady, I don't Jarrett's think accurate. That you're not going to tell me David Onyemata's 4 inches taller than Grady Jarrett either. So it is. I think T.Q. Graham's one of the bigger bodies when you look at this defense. I think he's an intriguing part of this entire thing because, look, I think you look at Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, and everything else that goes into this defensive front, and those are good players. But you have to find a way to have bigger bodies and continue to anchor down against when you have, like we did against the Eagles 2 weeks ago, a 360-pound left tackle, a 330-pound left guard, and some of the other players you're going against. So they're going to have to find different ways to stand up to the run because it looked like they were completely overmatched last week against that Chiefs O-line.
What do you guys think about A.J. Terrell D-off? You got to go against Chris Olave. You've got Rashid Shaheed as well. That could be an issue. And, Alford and A.J. Terrell, they've been – gashed a little bit.
Well, AJ was great last week.
He was.
But they didn't go after. They didn't target him much. They targeted Hughes and Alford last week with Rashee Rice. I think Mike Hughes has been phenomenal, Rob, so far. I think he's done everything you've asked him to do. I think AJ's been pretty good. Look, you just got to – Mike, what did you tell me yesterday that this defense has been in a majority of the time? What defense did
cover
you tell
three.
Me?
Cover three. Cover three a lot.
So – there have been cover three.
Cover three, 49% of the passing downs, which is a big number. Like top five in the NFL.
And am I wrong that when you play that cover three, you basically play that with a safety that's kind of an eraser, right? To kind of save you from that. That was what it was kind of here when DQ was here, to kind of save you from that. If that big play happens over the top, you've got somebody that can kind of save you there.
Yeah, and you'll do different things that usually cover three, in my opinion. I'm sure there's some defensive coach out there that's telling me I'm wrong. Cover three, in my opinion, it opens up a lot of the kind of underneath crossing routes, things like that, because you are in that cover three shell and those corners are kind of backing off a little bit.
Keeping everything in front of you.
Right, keeping everything in front of you. But it, to your point, and I want to make sure we go this route too, these corners in doing that, in cover three, keeping everything in front of you, you're still doing extremely well against the pass in terms of your overall ranking in the NFL, right? And you're doing that without much pass rush in front of you so far. So I think the secondary, in my opinion, has been nothing short of incredible when you look at everything that goes into it. When you're so bad against the run, you're so bad at rushing the passer, and yet all your passing stats are in the top, 11, 12 in the NFL, that's because every guy in the secondary has stepped up.
Let's hear from Jesse Bates on bending, not breaking.
I think this last game we had probably a couple 15-plus play drives where I don't think we were that good on third down last game. I think they converted. That goes back to getting these guys out of third and two, third and one, making it longer, third and longer distances. But I think we've done a really good job of responding in the red zone, of keeping guys out and forcing guys to kick field goals and keeping us in the game as well. So, there's a balance of that. You want to be top 10, top 5 and everything, but those stats will come as long as we continue to do our job and continue to get turnovers and play good defense.
And that's why I brought up that's why I'm about to bring up Cesar Ruiz, who did not practice yesterday for the second straight day. Does he practice today for them? They could essentially have three guys playing, three backups essentially playing in the middle of their line. I know that Lucas Patrick's a starter, but at center he's not. He's a backup there. It's a little bit out of sorts for him. I still think he'll play okay, but can this line swell up, shut down the run, and if there is as good against the deep stuff that they've as the secondary has been so far, you can keep everything in front of you. You might get in on third and longs where you get off the field.
Well, and too, I want to highlight this, and we've talked about this a couple of times. The Saints offensive line, there is not an analyst in the NFL realms that would have ranked them outside of the bottom 10 of offensive lines coming into the year. You didn't know what you had in rookie Talese Fuaga. Ryan Ramczyk was on the fence, and we know that he's not playing this year. Cesar Ruiz has had his ups and downs. He has struggled at times. Trevor Penning, good in the passing game, not great in the run game. Now you start taking shots at that offensive line. Now they start having guys leave with injury. I wonder if, because they were phenomenal the first couple of weeks.
Yep.
But now you start getting into these situations where all of a sudden you're not allowed to be the aggressor in the run game, right? Because you don't have the guys. Now all of a sudden a guy like Trevor Penning at right tackle is forced to pass protect. Now a rookie in Talese Fuaga, who is phenomenal, by the way, but is forced to pass protect because you're not running very well on first and second down. Now I think we're about to find out a lot about what the real Saints offense looks like this week.
All right, going to come back. 7:30 tomorrow night, Tuscaloosa, Georgia, Alabama. I've got two concerns regarding the Georgia Bulldogs. Coming up next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 1990 Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Georgia, two-point favorite in Tuscaloosa tomorrow night at 7:30. The over and under, 48.5, if you're interested in such things. And a little bit of history between these two teams. You know, Vince Dooley's first signature victory came over Bear Bryant, 1965, after Alabama won the national championship, ran a trick play, which Dooley was known to do every once in a while, and that was his first signature victory early in his tenure, and of course, there's been some back and forth since then. They haven't played enough, though.
Yeah, they definitely haven't, man. I've been lucky enough to be in this matchup a couple times as a player, and so, you know, it is interesting when you look at this game.
We're all getting the flash flood warnings on our phones.
Yeah,
I got one this morning as I was on the express lane. My phone starts vibrating. And I go, It says, "Do not attempt to travel unless you're fleeing an area." I'm like, "Well, I kind of am. I'm fleeing home to get to work."
Sorry, Mike. Go ahead. Keep going.
No. I mean, I think it's important to talk about. I said the same thing. I was like, you know, Sandy Springs is being evacuated. I was like, yeah, I'm evacuating to work to Midtown. No, man, but I think when you look at this game, it is interesting because the implied totals, I guess, Rob, when you look at the over-under and the spread, it's like 23-25.5, right? That's what you would think, supposedly Vegas thinks the final score is going to be. I would argue that neither of these offenses or these fan bases would be okay with those totals. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just feels – like, if Bama scores 23 in the game, I'm going to feel very bad about the offense. And I think Georgia fans would tell you if they're able to score 25 in the game, it's like this doesn't feel like a team that's doing what they can offensively.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? When you have a Heisman Trophy candidate, number one overall draft pick at quarterback, you have Etienne at running back, and you have some of the things that you have, it just seems like you should be scoring more points than that. I feel that way about Jalen Milroe and this Alabama offense with the offensive line they have.
Well, I think it's scary because – look what Brock Vandergrift did against Georgia a couple of weeks ago. He rushed for 70 yards, and he's not Jalen Milroe. He's
right.
Clearly pretty athletic, but this is certainly an issue.
Yeah, I think though too, what we saw in Kentucky is nothing that is not unlike anything we've ever seen in Kirby Smart's era going to Kentucky. Every time they go there, when Stoops is there, they find a game plan. If they play the game in Athens, it might have been 45
right.
to 10.
Somebody going up there, they're feisty up there. It's feisty.
It's just I understand the concerns. I really do. And I'm not saying Georgia's going to win Saturday. I'm not saying that they're the greatest team ever assembled. All I'm saying is I take the Kentucky game and I take a piece of paper and I wad it up and I throw it out because that's how it goes sometimes. Styles make fights, the matchups, the coaching staffs. You know, Mark Stoops, whether we want to give him credit or not, is a hell of a coach and a defensive coach at that. Carson Beck is still that dude that we saw last year.
A lot of people are starting to think otherwise in a way.
I think those people
can't win the big one.
I think those people are just they're the same people that when the strokes go, well, you know, he might be firing a coach soon. Oh, he lost one game. We might have to fire him because they don't know what they're watching or they just want to play the I want to be lazy and overreact. The guy lost Brock Bowers.
Ladd McConkey.
Multiple running backs. He lost Ra-Ra Smith, who was there last year, or Thomas, excuse me, who's been kicked off the team because he can't keep things out of straight. So he's lost multiple guys, and he's learning all of these new guys. They did get off to a slow start against Clemson, but I think Clemson's a lot better than we're giving them credit for.
Clemson's pretty good.
I think we just need to relax a little bit and say, you know what? They've had two pretty damn good opponents, one of which on the road, the other in neutral field. This is not an easy matchup, but I don't think it's time to just hit the panic button. And I know y'all aren't, but it feels like we are a little bit with some people talking about this team, with Carson Beck anyways.
I think it's always just a natural reaction because a lot of Bama fans kind of feel the same way. Like, you know, this is a make or break for Kalen DeBoer. No, it's not, dude. It's his fourth game in Alabama. Like, it's not make or break. But I'm with you. I will say this, though. I think a lot of what Carson Beck and let me preface it with this. I would take Carson Beck number one overall. As it sits right now, I would take him to Warner. So I really, really like him as a quarterback and as a prospect. I will say this, though. As an offense, a lot of the yardage they did compile last year was because of the great players that he was getting the ball to. And you get a nice downfield block. They had such gritty downfield blocking at Georgia that you're able to turn, you know, Ladd McConkey's able to turn those into explosive. Brock Bowers, the screen plays, turn them into explosives. I don't know that you found that guy yet offensively, and I think Georgia fans would completely agree with me that you have to find that downfield weapon. You know, they have a number of players, but I don't think they've identified that guy to be able to kind of break it loose in those big game situations.
Well, it seems like interior of their offensive line has been good. Now you're without Tate Rattledge. Seems like there's some questions at tackle. How much are they going to miss him?
Well, according to Rusty, and we've talked to him a number of times now about this because the Rattledge surgery was announced a while back, or you know, last week.
Yeah, explain tightrope surgery.
So what it is essentially, Rob, is when you have a high ankle sprain, there is separation of the tibia and the fibula with the foot, like, so everything kind of expands and swells outwards, and it takes a while for the ligaments to kind of shrink back down into place and to kind of tighten that entire joint up. And what you do is you have just a, you know, slightly invasive procedure that you go in and you put holes through the tibia and the fibula, and you put this rope through it essentially and kind
zip
of
tie.
Tighten it up. Yeah,
a
you
zip
kind
tie
of exactly like a metal zip. And I've got one in my foot. I still have one in my foot that's a tight rope. So you go in and it kind of just speeds up the ligament, you know, healing process to where it's about a third of the amount of time. So that's what he's dealing with. It'll get him back on the field faster. But back to your original question about how it affects the game, I think Georgia fans and the Georgia coaching staff have a lot of belief in the young man that will be playing right guard. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I watched his film last week against Kentucky, and I think he is a good player, but he's not Tate Rattledge. Right, Tate Rattledge is a day one starter in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So there will be some concern when it comes to that. But I think it's awesome for both of these guards that you had a bye week and you got to kind of get those reps next to the players you will be playing against in that game, and you can kind of move forward like that. I think that was it's not great to have Tate Rattledge out, but the timing of it is pretty good considering all things.
I think it's Micah Morris that's going to step in for Tate Rattledge. I just think what I'm trying to say is, you know, you lose Georgia is at the point of the program where they're losing key players every year. I mean, key players. And you're having to refine that chemistry and stuff. I mean, we've seen it kind of with
I think that's the word, chemistry. You're getting the guys with the pedigree, but it's all about the chemistry and cultivating that.
You got what is it? London? Is it London Humphreys?
Yeah. He's got mono though. He's not playing.
Yeah, but he's a guy that we saw when he had him in that first game against Clemson. He looked pretty good.
Like, he came from Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Yes,
did.
Or Vanderbilt, depending on who's pronouncing it. But like it's. I just think it takes time, and I'm not saying, again, this Alabama team is going through some of the same things. They lost not only players, they lost more starters actually off their front offense and defense, but they're going through a new coach. There are issues, but
for sure,
it just has to give time. But this is what we get. Kirby Smart is the highest paid coach in what, college football?
Yeah.
Because of what he does in the offseason and recruiting. And you got to believe that he's got the right guys in there that can step in place for a Tate Rattledge, and you won't miss much. You're always going to miss something with a starter, especially one of his pedigree, but you don't want to. You're not losing as much as a lot of teams would from first to second.
I completely agree, and here's you know what I'll finish the segment with. I can sit here and talk, and I've done this all week on a number of different platforms. You can talk about what Georgia may or may not have in the passing game, at the receiver position, at the skill position. Everything they're dealing with, Bama's secondary is dealing with, and some. They're playing freshmen at corner. They lost, you know, Caleb Downs. They lost Kool-Aid McKinstry. They lost Terrion Arnold. They lost all those guys as well. So it's a completely different matchup, and they are going to have their issues in this game as well. It's one of the reasons that Nick Saban did not pick Alabama to win the SEC was that secondary and the questions they have.
Well, you've heard of strength against strength. I guess this will be weakness on weakness.
There you go.
All right, going to come back. Top of the hour. The Falcon Killer will be playing on Sunday. That and more next on The Morning Shift. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan, by the way, America's largest injury law firm. You want me to get a zero res in there, too? A smart, lasting, clean? Let's do it all. Let's celebrate them all. The Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 929 The Game. Welcome back to The Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany, back with you on Monday for a man up Monday, but it's a fair or foul Friday. Falcons Saints going to meet for the 111th time on Sunday, 1 o'clock inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Both teams have won 55. And a guy that I hate but respect is the Falcon killer himself, Taysom Hill. You know what he went through in college. Two catastrophic knee injuries at BYU. Undrafted.
Which number matchup did you say this was?
111, I think.
111, okay. Yeah. I was just I was trying to do the math in my head when you said they're both 155.
You were over there ciphering in your head. I
was like, eh? All right, yeah. Sorry, Taysom Hill.
I know the Falcons have not beat a team more than they beat the Saints. And I would bet everything in both in my bank account to tell you that the Saints haven't beat a team more than they beat the Falcons.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's just how it goes when you play somebody twice a year for literally the existence of your franchises almost. I mean, that's pretty much how it goes.
But just think about it in perspective, because he two catastrophic knee injuries in college, undrafted, and he's the epitome of a football player.
And I think that if you talk to Saints fans, they'll kind of highlight the fact that they just don't seem to be good when he doesn't play.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it's just every time it seems like he's not part of their lineup or part of the game plan. And I don't know what position he's most valuable at. You know, third down, running quarterback, fullback, tight end, whatever it is. But I just know that when he's not on the field, this offense, for way before Clint Kubiak, seems to struggle.
Give him credit, because to me, this is supposed to be Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. Tim Tebow should have been a Taysom Hill player. I think Tebow is partly to blame for that, because he was his refusal for so long to not do that. But that's what Taysom Hill reminds me of. I mean, he's 6'2", 220. Tebow, I think, was 6'3", 230,
like 230, yeah.
240. But that's what Tebow was supposed to have been.
Here's what Hill's done against the Falcons. By the way, Saints are 10-4 versus the Falcons when he does play. He's got 10 catches, 100 yards, a touchdown, 62 carries, 4 touchdowns, averaging 7 yards a carry when he does carry the ball. Oh, passing, by the way, 57 of 75, 702 yards and 4 touchdowns. And how many times have you seen the Falcons defense maybe getting off the field as 3rd and 9 and Hill run off one for 19 yards?
Or he catches an 11-yard catch. Yeah.
It's just exasperating.
Two of those games that he's 10 and 4 being on the field came as a starter against us.
Starting quarterback.
Yes, starting quarterback with Sean Payton as the the head coach, OC, guru, whatever you want to call him. He's just been phenomenal. When you see him on the field, he is a guy that when I'm spotting for Wes in the booth, if I see 7 walk on the field, I'm frantically pointing because I need Wes to know he's on the field, because the ball is most likely going to him. That's what it always seems. A big play is about to happen.
Completely agree, man. He's dangerous, and I just feel a collective groan up in the press box when he comes out on the field and then whatever situation he's put in.
And what's with the of course, the Hoodats are going to be here. There's always going to be a couple of tubas, too. They always bring – a couple of guys bring their tubas to town, too, it seems like. So I do not want to hear those tubas when I do the Falcons flyover on Sunday at the Signia by the Hilton.
They're just trying to stand up and get crunk. You know what I mean? That's all it is. They're trying to stand up and get crunk, which I honestly – I do love their pregame. I can't lie to you. Down there, it was always fun to – they always have a guy come out in the middle
– with the umbrella.
And drop the hammer, and, you know, everybody gives it the old Hoodat and everything else, which I thought was kind of a cool thing. It was always a player, like Jari Evans would be out there. And
no, wasn't it Benson with his umbrella?
Benson. The player would walk out, put their fist up, and drop it, and everybody kind of, you know, screams at the same time, which I thought was cool. But don't bring your tuba into Mercedes-Benz. Well, I don't need that. You don't want the smoke.
And this is a rivalry, too, before we get to how the Falcons need to play Derek Carr, because Mike's got some amazing stats we'll get to in just a couple of seconds here.
The numbers.
But this is a rivalry that has some crossovers, too. Remember, Curtis Lofton was drafted here, and played linebacker here with you, Mike. Or not, you played linebacker. It was one of your teammates, and he went to New Orleans. Bobby Hebert. It's pronounced Hebert.
Not Hebert.
But it's spelled Hebert.
Morton Anderson.
Morton Anderson. And it's funny because Bobby's back in New Orleans. He does pregame for WWWL every year. So every year now, Bobby wants me to come on and do their hit in their pregame. So when Mike and Chris go for it during our pregame, which starts at 11 o'clock Sunday morning on 92.9, when they're talking to Wes and Arch in a booth, I'm over there with Bobby. And Bobby's got this this thing about the name Squidbilly. Mm-hmm. And so he makes a point. Yeah, you know, we got Squidbilly from the Atlanta Falcons. Squidbilly, and he says a name like three times in the question. but we got these crossover guys in this rivalry. Joe Horn played on both sides. Right. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have played on both. David Onyemata, Caden Ellis. There's a lot of guys that have played on both sides. This even adds to the fuel.
It's incestuous.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. It's funny, man. And Curtis Lofton was just one of those guys. I loved him as a teammate. I remember me and him when I was a rookie. I didn't have anywhere to live here. When you're a rookie and OTA is over, you kind of have to go home, and there's not really a place where you stay until you get back to training camp. I remember walking in. I like showed up early. I think I got like a hotel room. Showed up like a week early before training camp. Curtis Lofton walks in the waiting room. He's like, "Yeah. Yeah, don't show up right before we get to training camp." I was like, "Curtis, I don't have anywhere to live, dude." Like, I don't know. And he kind of looked at me like, "Oh." And then he goes, "You can come stay with me if you want." I was like, "Yeah, dude, reminder, buddy. Like, I don't have a house to go back to right now." But that was always fun. Man, good teammate, man. Good dude. And God, he played tough, man. So
yeah, he was a hell of a player. It was. We got to deal with him a lot when he was here. He was a great dude. All right. You have some numbers.
Correct.
The Falcons have played, you said, was it 94? Something percent of their snaps this season have been in cover three?
Not quite that many. Okay. Not quite that many. Let's back that down a little bit.
Okay.
So the Falcons have only played man coverage on 14% of dropbacks. That ranks 28th percent in the NFL. Let me say that one more time. The Falcons have only played man coverage on 14% of the other team's dropbacks. Right? Just straight up dropbacks. I'm not talking about like play action, all this other stuff. Like just straight up dropbacks, Falcons have only played 14% man coverage. They've been in cover three on 49% of their snaps, which is number four in the NFL.
Do you do that because your two safeties, Pro Bowl caliber, you kind of let them kind of rover around? Is that sort of that?
There is a number of reasons you do it. First of all, when you're in cover three, primarily you're going to be in zone underneath, right? You're going to have four players for five zones, and a lot of times you do that to simply just limit the explosive plays, which they've done at a very high clip. The Atlanta Falcons just have not given up, and I'm trying to find the stat I had written down.
And
11th in passing points allowed per attempt, only 6th in yards allowed per attempt in the NFL.
And cover three is basically the middle safety, the deep safety has basically everything,
right?
And anything deep, and the cornerbacks on the outside cornerbacks have anything from behind, everything down the sideline, basically.
Correct. They have deep thirds along the sideline. The corners will drop deep, and then you'll have whatever combination underneath your strong safety and your linebackers and everybody else kind of dropping into whatever coverage. You can run man coverage underneath a cover three deep. You just don't do it very often. The Falcons don't do it very often. So you're primarily a cover three team. The Atlanta Falcons run the fourth most cover three in the NFL. The only issue with that going into this weekend, Derek Carr's numbers against cover three. Here we go. 20 of 28 for 306 yards. That's 10.9 yards per attempt and two touchdowns, right? So he's been very good. And we talk about cover three. And like I said, sometimes when you're in cover three and you have these zones underneath, it kind of the short routes, like if the wide receivers run a quick slant, things like that, it can kind of open you up to those styles of plays. That's when Derek Carr has been very, very good, right? It's kind of throwing the underneath stuff and creating explosives and letting his players get out there and run.
All right, let's hear from Raheem Morris on what David Carr can do to you.
Derek Carr, when clean and everything is going right, he is an absolute stud in this league. You know, you got to affect the passer, and that goes for everybody. But if you can find a way to affect him, I have some very highly competitive battles versus Derek Carr throughout the years, whether he's been in Oakland, wherever he's been. Now a Saint, last year versus him, when we jumped ahead and he came roaring back. And so we got to find ways to affect Derek Carr, and he's playing very well.
He was a full participant. He's got a groin injury.
A groin?
Yeah, that's right.
What's going on with the groins down? That was Eric McCoy had the same thing.
Yeah, but he was a full participant yesterday. I think Derek Carr gets a bad rap. everything Raheem Morris is, that's what I've seen. You know, obviously he knows more than me, but that's what I've seen is, dude, you give him time, he will absolutely shred you. There's a reason why guys like Davante Adams wanted to come play with him. And
he's got a lot of fourth quarter comebacks too.
Yeah, he's a good player when he's had a chance, but he's also played for the Raiders his entire career until last year, and then he didn't get any. I don't think he got much better going to the Saints. You know, that's what I think. But they got to him last week. They hit him early and often. Jalen Carter last week played his best game as a pro. Now, you start to think about it, and can one of our guys have a game like that because of their injuries up front with McCoy and Ruiz and Lucas Patrick having to move over and you're moving in there? Also to the point of, do you play him differently because of his success against a cover three? Because the cover three seemed to work last week against Patrick Mahomes as far as limiting big plays.
Well, and here's what I'll say about that. I don't think you play him any different because I think that's just what Atlanta is. And I think that there's something to saying, well, you know, matchup-wise, he's been good against this, so we don't want to give him this look. There's ways to disguise it. I think one of the craziest stats is I think they've run we talked about this earlier, Squid. New Orleans has run something like 96% of their snaps have had motion before the snap on their dropbacks. They've motioned, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're motioning, trying to get you to kind of show your hand as far as what your disguise is for the coverage that you are in. So, you know, I think, and it goes back to first and second down, right? And I think that we've talked about how good the Saints have been running the ball with a line that nobody thought would be great. But here's the problem that I've noticed, and I think a lot of people say this about Gary Kubiak, all right? And I think Clint Kubiak kind of has the same mindset. They will run the ball on first and second down when they have no business running the ball on first and second down. Their ability to run the ball on early downs is almost last in the league at success rate. They are averaging next to nothing running the ball on first and second down.
Well, Alvin Kamara is looking like what he did 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, he looks.
Oh yeah, he looks like rookie year to me. Yeah. He's having that kind of impact. It's going to be interesting, that number, that stat you just said, Mike, because Rob, our defense has not been good when ran against early in down sets, and that's why teams have been able to stay on the field against us because they've been in third and shorts a lot.
11, what is that, the Falcons, 27th against the run, giving up about 150 yards a game. Got to clean that up. All right, going to come back. Grouchy Al Michaels, and I'm all for it. Coming up next in the morning, Steve Sports Radio, 1990 Game. So, brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean, and bless your heart out there if you're suffering from flooding. I guess Zero Res is going to be busy.
Yeah, it looks like it just picked up here. Business just picked up outside as far as the downpour. I mean, yep. It looks like it's raining the heaviest it's rained all morning. So if you're out there, slow down. I mean, there's no hurry. The roads were pretty empty early this morning, right, when we were on them.
Rain's going to move out around lunchtime. Yep.
Yeah.
It's not looking good. Weather looks good for Braves baseball tonight. Max Fried gets a start. Just win, baby. You're scratching and clawing. Just win. We're not going to go over all the scenarios. Just win.
That's the bottom line. Take it out of the mathematics equation and just keep winning. That's you have to do.
Yeah, Brady Singer's on the mound for the Royals against Max Fried. He's very hittable this year. So
good at bats, patient at bats. Look for your pitch to hit. Don't go up there all anxious.
Yeah, this is the postseason, baby. This is the closest thing you might get.
Baseball. It's truest tonight. 2-point favorite, Georgia is at Tuscaloosa tomorrow night. Weather's looking good there, just cloudy. About a 20% chance of rain, of course. Falcons, Saints on Sunday, and I'll be doing Falcons flyover, the Signia by Hilton, that beautiful state-of-the-art hotel right next door to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So come by and look for the distinguished, aging, but handsome man.
Rob, I always leave the Falcons games, the home games at halftime. So you do pregame there, then I'll go sit in the media, you know, the press box, and then I'll leave around halftime and try to get back to the studio to watch the second half and do postgame from here. I got to tell you, I walked out at halftime the other day, and I was just looking at that Signia, and I was like, man, that looks like such a good time over on that patio.
Fourth floor, the nest on the fourth floor. Food is good. Service is good. Service is a dying thing, but the service is impeccable. Their food's pretty good, too. I had the smash burger that was...
Oh, nice. We stayed there after Zach Bryan. We stayed in the hotel, and so we obviously went to the...
Did y'all do weird stuff?
I mean, no more than normal. But we went down to the Nest on 4, where you do the show from. What a cool bar. They got the little mini halo that they have in there for the TVs. That place gets hopping. Of course, it was that night. I know it is after Falcons games.
Well, I hope it's hopping with Falcons fans, because Saints fans will take that place over with their tubas if the Saints win on Sunday.
You got to kick them
15 out. 15 penalties last night. 15 flags thrown in the Dallas Cowboys' 20-15 victory over the Giants. And Michaels had had enough. Let's get to in the huddle. Sorry.
Some of those were against their own team, Rob. They're good. The Giants have their opening drive, and they get a first down, and they call it back for a face mask on the Giants. And you go back to the replay, and the Cowboys defender grabs the face mask of the Giants tight end blocking. They called the and they didn't even correct it. And then they call there's a Dallas touchdown when they call holding, the first Dallas touchdown. It's clearly holding. The player, they call it, they throw the flag. The defender's shoulder pads are exposed from where the jersey has been pulled. They picked it up. I just don't know what's going on with officiating in this league. It goes back to Sunday night with the pass interference call that wasn't thrown. I just don't understand how the league can continue to have these primetime games where, like Sunday night, the commissioner was at, and the officiating be so poor.
That's all rigged, that's why. How much you guys enjoy grouchy Al Michaels?
I love him. Dude, I love him.
Well, let's hear him.
I do too.
2-minute warning has not occurred. We got another flag. It's like June 14th here, otherwise known as Flag Day, as you know. Clay Martin looks like a referee out of Central Casting.
It's like a young Terry McCauley out there.
I heard that Central Casting line, and when they kicked the field goal or an extra point, he goes, "It was a field goal." Giants get a field goal, and he goes, "And on cue, a flag has been thrown."
He did. There was one. I think it was when CeeDee Lamb scored the long touchdown on the nice throw from Dak, and he goes, "Yeah, we actually have a touchdown without a flag." And then he goes, "And somebody in my ear is saying there actually is one." So. Yeah, and it was a celebration flag. So it was after the play, but it was hilarious. His reaction was like,
"He also said, yep. I guess the official's gonna have to go on to Amazon and order more flags."
Yeah, I mean, he's good, dude. He's one of my favorites. I got a question about him coming up in Fair Foul, so you don't want to miss that too. But I love that combination that they have on Thursday nights. A little bit of, Kirk. I always say youth with Kirk Herbstreit. He's not young, but he is in terms of what Al Michaels is. Yeah. So
what is Al Michaels? 82.
He's got to be in his 80s. So yeah, man. It's just I think they're a good combination on Thursday nights.
And he's still, of course he's lost a little bit off his fastball, but he's still wonderful. Just
oh, for sure.
Just
he's for sure.
He's what?
Turns 80 in November.
79.
Turns 80 in November.
Well, 79 is the new 59 when it comes to Al Michaels, I guess. And the Cowboys get a win. That's a franchise that's been under some scrutiny, has it, with what the Saints did to him, especially.
A shout out to everybody that was like me last night on the Cowboys, minus the six, and the kicker misses the field goal at the end of the game with 30 seconds left. It could have covered for that, and it did not. So that's unfortunate.
I actually like Mike McCarthy. I think he's a good coach. I think he did a great job when he was with Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers only won one title, and it was with Mike McCarthy, and they did it when they had a lot of injuries. There are times, though, when he's on the sideline for Dallas, and he already kind of a goofy looking dude, and the crucial catch hats, which I really like the fact that they do the crucial catch. You know, it's basically cancer awareness. But there's something about they're like the plaid type hats this year.
Yeah,
and there's something about they throw a flag, they zoom over to Mike McCarthy, and he's wearing big old dude with a plaid hat, and he looks bewildered. It's just a weird look. He just looks lost.
I thought
at times.
Brian Daboll looked the same last night.
Oh,
looked
he
bewildered
did.
And lost. Like he they did. Keep going to him. He's got this look on his face, like, "I'm sorry, what did you just say to me?" You know, like he just like, yeah, bewildered. It's a good word.
Well, but he looked bewildered because they could only kick 5 field goals, could not get in the end zone last
night. Yeah,
and I didn't think Daniel Jones looked terrible either.
29-40, 281. Yeah. Had the one interception.
That's not an interception. That's a Hail Mary throw up.
Yeah.
I don't even think those should count against a stat because you get some jackleg who didn't watch the game and you go, "Yeah, see, he's always turning the ball over. Interception." And it's just like, did you watch the game?
I will say this, Rob, to kind of put a bow on that game last night. I texted Bo this last night. Kayvon Thibodeau, for everything that he's supposed to be in, you know, there's always been questions about what kind of guy. There were at least 3 times last night I looked at him and I was like, he's exhausted. I mean, exhausted. Like, can't hardly breathe. Like, they actually threw a swing pass to his side, and I think it resulted in a touchdown, or maybe that touchdown was called back. And it was like, dude, he didn't have enough energy to chase the play.
Wait, was he part of that questionable Hugh Freeze recruiting class at Ole Miss?
No. That was in Kandichi. But it was a lot of the same mold when he was coming out of Oregon about whether whether or not he loved the game. There was questions about that.
Well, football's not the number one thing.
Right. That's fine. I don't blame him for that, but it looked like last night football was not the number one thing in his offseason.
And let me tell you something. When you're the fifth overall pick in your third year and you've only got 16 sacks, which I'm not saying is terrible because that's not bad necessarily for only in his third year, but when an organization feels about you to the point where they have to bring in a guy like Brian Burns to be the man, and so you can just get a few, and you're in your fourth game of the year, you look out of shape, I don't know if that's a good look for you.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think his fifth-year option is going to be picked up if this continues.
What's with these quarterbacks that have been paid that are not – Jalen Hurts, interceptions in seven straight games. Trevor Lawrence looks like an absolute disaster down in Jackson.
Man, he's rough.
I think Jalen Hurts has been a product of whatever happened with his injury late in the season of the Super Bowl year, and then last year they tried to play in the pocket more. Jalen Hurts needs to play like he did against us, where he's free to run a little bit more. I think it makes him a better player. I think he's forced the ball at times, too. That interception against Green Bay down in Brazil where he threw it out of his own end zone, that was just a ball that in no way, shape, or form you should throw.
Well, you could say that against the Saints, too. He threw in the end zone last week.
I remember I was talking to someone, and that was one that I think it was Arch and I were talking about. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but somebody I was talking about that much smarter than me about the game was like, most people were going to look at it and think that was on Hurts, but it wasn't because there was a route issue there. But he's just forced the ball a little bit lately. Trevor Lawrence, Mike, you got any answers? Because I just think they're a loss.
The overthrow that whoever it was caught it last week, was it DeMar Hamlin? They caught the overthrow.
Yeah, DeMar Hamlin, yeah.
It was bad. It's bad. And I think that's why you see Doug Peterson coming out and say all options are on the table. And here's the answer to your question, Rob. These guys, these teams are being it's a matter of structure in the NFL, right? You're almost being forced into situations where you have to pay these quarterbacks. And like Trevor Lawrence, prime example, you draft him number one overall. He's going to be your guy. You have to, get rid of the head coach and everything else going around. So you give him the benefit of the doubt. You're basically paying off what you think he could be.
Yep.
Right? Instead of what he is. And I think the same thing goes with Jalen Hurts. You have a good year, you got to pay the man. There's just a number. Tua Tagovailoa, you got to pay the man. All these, Jordan Love, got to pay the man. And it's all based off of really a one-year sample size and what they possibly could be.
Gardner Minshew, statistically, I think he's been a little bit better than Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, I believe that for sure. Gardner Minshew plays the game without fear. Let me just put it that way. Yep. Like
Uncle Rico.
Uncle Rico. I'm gonna turn this. I'm gonna turn it over three times, but I'm gonna throw this pigskin down the field. You know what I mean? You can best believe.
I do think that it's easier for Gardner Minshew to play the way he does than it would be for Trevor Lawrence.
I agree. 100%.
Because Trevor Lawrence,
he's not going to leave anything out there.
Well, Gardner Minshew's not as much as expected out of me.
No, and he can't leave it. He can't leave anything out there, but he has to give it everything. Because Gardner Minshew has got one thing locked up. As long as he wants to, he will be on a roster in this league. Because he is, if he's not one of the best 32, which I think he is, he's definitely one of the best 35, which means he'll be on a roster for the rest of his forever until he wants to say he's Chase Daniels, but better at this point.
All right, so stop what you're doing at 8:20. David Archer is going to be joining us. But Mike, what day is it?
It's Fair Foul Friday, right?
Yes.
Go ahead and put your fingers on that plate and pull a little sample out. Let me give you a little sample right here. You ready? How about this one? The winning quarterback tomorrow night, Bama versus Georgia, becomes the Heisman favorite immediately after the game. That's Fair Foul Friday. Coming up on the other side of the break, it's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Fair Foul Friday. And it's Falcons Friday, too, man. So you guys have to play the game.
Is this where I go, wah, wah, wah?
Wah, wah, wah. but I always love playing Fair Foul Friday with Rob in the building, man. It's a lot of fun. We'll dive right into it.
You don't play. You just ask questions. I play with Rob.
If you want to get into semantics and cut me off in the middle of my segment, then that's one thing. All right. So we'll do this. You guys know how to play the game. If you've never heard this segment before, welcome in. Thank you for listening. What I do is I make a statement. Rob and Bo say whether or not it's fair or it's foul. So let's start off. We'll go straight
to Bama versus Georgia. Fair or foul, Bama will be Georgia's toughest game this year. And let me remind you some of the games they have coming up. They'll play Auburn. They'll play Mississippi State. They'll go to Austin to play Texas. They'll go to Ole Miss, and they'll have Tennessee at home. Bama will be Georgia's toughest opponent this season. Fair or foul, but we'll start with you.
I got to go foul. I think Bama is extremely good. I think they're one of the top 5 to 7 teams in the country right now. But I think going to Austin, Texas is going to be different for Georgia. I just think it's a different trip. Bama's a team you've played and you kind of understand them and you know what's in it. But I think this Texas thing could possibly catch them off guard if they're not ready for it player-wise. And I think Texas is the best team in the country right now.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Rob?
Foul when they go to Austin.
Okay. All right. You let him talk you into it.
I thought that beginning with that. I'm an independent thinker.
Unbelievable. All right. How about this one?
Confirm that.
Let's focus on another big game happening this weekend, Falcons and Saints. Falcons, and we talked about this stat category yesterday. Falcons, sacks plus takeaways. Sacks plus takeaways will be 5 or more. Sacks plus takeaways will be 5 or more for the Falcons against the Saints on Sunday. Sacks plus takeaways, 5 or more. Bo, we'll start with you.
I'm going to have to go foul, and I hate that I'm doing that way, but that would be an anomaly of a game. So what we've seen so far.
Right.
I think you're averaging like a sack and a turnover, or a sack and a turnover and a half, or something. It's like 1.5 is a sack turnover, whatever number you're saying. Right now for this team, jump to 5, that's a lot. I do think the number goes up this week, though.
Yeah. All right, what do you think,
Rob? I'm going to say fair. Eric McCoy out of the lineup for the Saints. They're only averaging 3 yards a carry without him in the lineup. They're going to run. They're not going to be able to run the balls effectively. David Carr not as mobile. Mm. Yes.
I hope you're right.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. All right, let's talk about a little bit of baseball. Dodgers and Yankees clinch yesterday. If the Braves weren't able to make it, Dodgers versus Yankees is by far the most watchable World Series. Dodgers versus Yankees is by far the most watchable World Series if the Braves aren't able to make it. We'll start with you, Rob.
For nostalgia purposes, yeah, glamorous, iconic franchises, I will say fair.
Okay, what do you think, Bo? Dodgers versus Yankees, most watchable World Series.
Everything he said is reason why if my life was on the line, I would say fair. However, I'm going to tell you foul. Because I couldn't care less to watch the Dodgers and the Yankees. I just don't. I'm sick of both teams. I don't like both teams. I think it's a turnoff for some markets, but you're going to get more people watching that series than you've probably gotten in the last 20 years of a World Series.
And I won't pay much attention. I'd watch a Game 7 if it went to Game 7. Yeah. I'd just kind of peek at it here and there.
One and seven is what I'd watch. Yeah. I might have it on to see if Ohtani does anything special. But
all right. All right, let's go to this one. Last night, obviously, we talked about Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit in the booth. Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, better than Buck and Aikman. Michaels and Herbstreit on Thursday night, better than Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Rob, we'll start with you.
I'll say fair, because I just love Al Michaels.
Right.
And I think he brings something out of Herbstreit, too, and I like Herbie.
But he gets a little edge on Kirk, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It brings a little edge to him. I think you're completely right.
Foul.
Okay.
I'm a bigger fan of Aikman than I am Herbstreit in the booth.
Okay.
And I like what Troy Aikman brings. I mean, this has nothing to do with the fact that we have stood at urinals next to each other, and he does wash his hands afterwards. I'm just saying, I like Aikman as an analyst better than Herbstreit in the booth.
But he chews with his mouth open.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay, all right. I was curious.
Let's go back to Tuscaloosa for this next one, and we mentioned this one going into the break. The winning quarterback tomorrow night will become the Heisman favorite. Whoever it is, Jalen Milroe, Carson Beck, whichever one it is, Rob, we'll start with you. Fair foul.
Foul, foul, foul. Travis Hunter, if he stays healthy.
Travis, okay, all right. I did not think you were going to go there, but yeah, okay. I tend to agree with you. What do you think, Bo? Fair
it's
foul.
It's absolutely foul, and Rob said it perfectly. I will add this to what Rob said. The Heisman Trophy is supposed to be about the best player in college football, not the best quarterback
or
on the best
back.
Team yep. in college football. Therefore, if you don't give it to Travis Hunter and he stays healthy, as Rob said, then you need to change the name of the trophy or the meaning of what the trophy is at this point, because you're all liars.
All right, let's go back to last night's
thieves.
let's go back to last night's game. Daniel Jones is the quarterback of the Giants in the 2025 season. Daniel Jones, quarterback of the Giants in the 2025 season. But we'll start with you. Is that fair or foul?
It's foul as this trajectory. Excuse me. They're not going to lose games and stay with Daniel Jones as a starting quarterback. I don't think Daniel Jones is playing badly, though. That's the problem, is he might lose a job and not really be playing terrible. However, you're not putting enough touchdowns on the board, and you need to be. He still needs to be better.
Rob, we'll
he could have his story could be similar to Vikings quarterback
Sam Darnold.
Yeah, he could have a go somewhere else and get a new lease on life. Carson Beck will be the quarterback of the Giants next year.
But I do think he's been better in his career at this point.
I just want to get
Carson
hot take.
Beck, not Shador Sanders.
No.
All right, let's go. Let's get two more. Is it weird, or I'm going to say it's weird that A's fans were taking dirt from the Coliseum last night? It's weird that the A's fans were taking dirt, shoveling dirt into bags and taking it home. Weird that A's fans were taking dirt. Rob, we'll start with you.
Well, I get it. I certainly get it. There's a lot of history of that franchise, especially in the 70s, late 80s with La Russa, Canseco, McGuire. It's not weird.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Bo?
I wouldn't do it.
The A's fans were taking dirt home last night.
That's foul. I would take dirt home too from a stadium that I had those memories from. Okay. Well, that doesn't mean it's like dump dirt. I mean, it the stadium's
a lot of losses on that dirt.
You know, they had a lot of wins too, dude. I hate to break it to you, but they were at one time a really, really good team. Before and even
did they three-peat in the early 70s?
I don't know if they three-peated it, but I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Someone looked that up. I think they may have.
All right, let's
they
finish
were with, a storied franchise until they got a trash ownership group.
Let's finish with this one. Bama versus Georgia will be played at least twice this year. At least twice this year, you'll see Bama versus Georgia. Rob, we'll start with you.
They could play three times.
They could. At least twice. Fair foul.
I will say fair.
Okay. Yeah, you think you'll see it again. Bo, what do you think?
Foul.
Fair foul.
I don't think they play in the SEC championship game, and I'm not sure because of that if they play in the college football playoff.
Oh, interesting stuff, man.
That doesn't mean that both teams can't.
They did three-peat.
That either team could be in the national title, or I just don't think they're going to match up because of the.
Match up because of the seeding.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's cool. Thank you guys for playing. That is Fair Foul Friday, man.
That was a very efficient, solid.
You like just rolling through there, baby.
I love
Hit
all
me
of
with it.
I love the hard-hitting sports questions that this week. It was. It was
cleaner than zero red. You know what? You know what? Fair
if
foul Friday.
Was, if I need
you
to.
Gave us a smart, lasting clean
That's
with
right.
that one.
That's
just
right.
like zero res. Hey, we got David Archer coming up at 8:20. And what are we doing next? I just got lost.
Pick segment.
Oh, we're doing the picks.
We're
Bills,
setting
Ravens,
ourselves
Georgia,
up for failure,
Alabama.
Rob.
We're also gonna kind of update you on everything going on with the Braves in the series this weekend.
Ooh, and I'm 2 games under 500. You're 3 games under. Mike's 1 game under. We're going to make our picks. We're going to man up Monday and be held accountable. It's a morning shift, Sports Radio 99 again. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. The remnants of Helene are moving their way out, but she's not going out quietly. The winds are, there's a big time wind advisor. They're basically saying stay away from windows at this point in time.
Really?
So this is, we're nothing but windows here on the ninth floor of Colony Square.
So studio is a window.
Oh, man. Be careful out there, everybody.
Yeah, I do get worried at Casa de Squid, where, you know, obviously out there because we have a lot of trees around all of our neighbors. We're in a very tree-filled neighborhood. They didn't cut a lot down. As one of the neighbor, this is an old man that lived behind us when we first moved in, and he came to the fence line and was talking to us, and he was like, all these stupid trees, damn hippies built the neighborhood. They didn't cut any of them down. And my other neighbor that was standing there.
Yeah, he's anti-tree.
Dude, my other neighbor that's standing there, as I walked in the house, he goes, I'm sorry about Bill. He just doesn't care. He's a little bit older. And I go, dude, it's fine, man. He didn't offend me at all.
It's hilarious.
Just cracked me up, but he didn't offend me.
Well, Atlanta does have a rich, lush canopy, like one of the great. When you fly into the cities, like it's amazing. Well, the developers doing their part to do away with the canopy. But yeah, be careful. The winds are going to get nasty. All right, gentlemen. So as far as picks go, I haven't been around as much as you guys have. I'm at 2-4. Squid, you're what are you, 6-9? Mike, barking up the tree at 7-8.
Got to cross the 500 threshold.
Got to get to 500.
Get going.
Rob, we had a week where we went combined. Was it 1-7, Mike?
Yeah.
And Mike was the one. And then last week, I think we went what a combined.
6-2,
yeah.
Oh, 6-2, yeah.
Yeah, so we did pretty good.
Had a rebound, you know what I mean? Always comes back to the mean, right? That's always a good thing.
All right, you want to get this going right now? Let's do this, shall we?
Let's do it.
Bills at Ravens. Ravens a 2.5-point favorite, over under 46.5. What say you, Squid?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have a feel for any of these games this week. I really don't. I honestly don't. This game, this is a weird line to me, Rob, because the Bills are 3-0. The Ravens have struggled. The Ravens almost blew it late last week. But I think they built some momentum. This line at home is weird. I don't think the Bills can go 4-0. I just don't know why. I don't like that. I'm going Baltimore and the 2.5, and I am not in any way confident about that pick. It's just my thought.
No, yeah, I think this is one of those picks that you the way that you do this. Sometimes you go down and say which one's kind of open your eyes as you look down the slate. I look at this and I feel the exact same way, Bo. Everybody has been saying that Buffalo might be one of the Super Bowl favorites, and then you look down and you look at the Ravens sitting there at 1-2 now, and they're 2.5-point home favorites, and that kind of leaves you scratching your head. So I'm going with you. I'm going with the Ravens at home. I think they're a good team that got off to a bad start. I think the Bills are very, 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 very good, but nobody goes undefeated in this league.
No,
man.
They don't.
It eventually reverts to the mean.
It is a kind of a little correction of a weekend. The Ravens are much better than the 1-2 record. Ravens win this game at home 26-23. All right. Let's go to Tuscaloosa, shall we? 7:30 kickoff. Georgia, a 2-point favorite. Now I'm seeing 1 point here. Over under 50.5. I think this is a low scoring game. What do you think, Mike?
It just sounds like I got a gnat in my ear. Somebody just said something. I don't know what that even meant. No, I mean, look, let's keep the main thing here, Rob. And you know me, I try to be as objective as I can. But the bottom line is, this weekend I got too much Bama in me. And let's call it what it is. I do think that Bama probably has the upper hand in some ways. I think that if you're a Vegas sharp and you're looking at some of the defensive weaknesses, I think Bama's able to harass Carson Beck, though. I think Bama has a double-digit home win. I'm going to go 31-21. Bama covers. Yeah.
Oof.
Well, another game that I don't have any feel for, because I think these two teams are so freaking close. I think one team's strength is the other team's weakness and vice versa. And when I say strength and weakness, I don't mean strength or weakness. I just think that team, that they are separate places where one team's slightly better than the other.
Correct, yep.
But I'll tell you where I think there is a bigger edge, Rob, and that's where it starts with the head coaches. And I think Kalen DeBoer is a hell of a coach. But I believe Kirby Smart is the best coach in college football right now. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I have to take the better coach. I'm taking Kirby Smart and the Dogs to cover the one. Mm. They're going to win by two, baby.
What is Kirby against Bama? 1-5? But Nick Saban's not there.
I'm not sure.
It's 1-4 or 1-5, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those two.
Bad outing against Kentucky. Had a week off because of that. I could see either team winning this game. I'm just going to be a homer and say Georgia wins this thing 27-23.
All right.
He's 1-5. I did the math.
Yeah, there you go. A lot of those championship games.
All right, what's your bonus pick there, Squid?
Well, I'll go ahead and stay in college football, if that's okay with you gentlemen. Me and Mike talked about this off the air. He brought it to my attention. I have zero clue what Vegas is doing with the fact that per ESPN, which is what all of our picks have been by, the 2.5 came from ESPN, the 1 came from ESPN. Oklahoma is traveling to Jordan-Hare, which is one of the tougher places to play in the country. I have been there when number one Florida came in there and lost, or number two Florida, I believe, at the time, came in there and lost in 2006, which was a national championship season for them. But I have no clue why this game is even. None. I'm baffled. I know that Oklahoma's starting a new quarterback, but they are a better roster, and I think they're better coached right now than Auburn. I'm going to pick Oklahoma straight up. In this game.
Oh, man. You're falling into the trap. I'm just telling you. You're falling into the trap. I agree with everything you just said. Also, I think Vegas knows all those things, and that's why it leaves me scratching my head as to why that line would be out there. It's funny you bring this one up because we were talking about it. I'm staying on this game, but I'm doing a little bit what you did last week. I'm actually just going to go with the under in this one. I've got it at 45 right now. I know what you're seeing. I think Oklahoma's defense under Brent Venables is next level. I don't think Auburn's offense can really hold up in that situation. But Oklahoma's offense is not very good either. They had to make a switch at quarterback. There's a lot of other questions about that. Give me the under in Auburn, Oklahoma, under 45. That is going to be a good one.
I'm going to go up to Happy Valley for mine. 19th ranked Illinois, the Fighting Illini at the Fighting Mike Contis of Penn State. Illinois with the upset. Illinois wins this one 30-27.
That's a good pick. That's a really, you know what I almost did on the college before we get to the NFLs real quick? I almost, UNLV is a 2-point home favorite this week after losing their quarterback.
Not really?
You want to talk about putting your antenna up just like I was just talking about? I was very close to selecting UNLV -2 with their new quarterback in the backfield against Fresno. That might be something I'm in play for tomorrow. I'm going to have to keep my eye on it for sure.
Very interesting. All right, Mike, where you want to start? You want to start this with your NFL?
I'll go NFL, my NFL bonus pick. Look, a ton of injuries in San Francisco, right, when everything they're dealing with. I actually like Gerard Mayo and the brand of football that New England's been playing with this year. The 49ers
That's been a surprise, hasn't it?
49ers are 10-point favorites. 10-point favorites on the road against New England. I'm going with San Francisco.
Oh.
I'm going with San Francisco. Why on earth is San Francisco a 10-point favorite? Because they're that much better than New England is. Look at New England's offense. Inept. Just could not do anything last week. I'm going to go San Francisco to cover that 10 right there. I think they win by a couple of touchdowns, if not more. I think this is a lopsided game.
Where's that game at?
You want to talk about coaching matchups.
Where's that game at?
It's in New England is what I'm
going to. Oh, you're falling in the trap.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you're falling in the trap. You're going to regret that one. You're going to regret that one.
Yeah, I've done that to you 2 weeks in a row. You're just trying to get it on the record when I lose. It's not happening. San Fran. San Fran by 3 touchdowns.
Vegas lost to an inept Carolina team the 2 weeks before. Some say it's a different team. Some say it's a good team. I don't know. All I know is Vegas looked a lot better when they played the Ravens. I am confused and baffled the fact that they're a 2-point favorite. However, the thing that confuses me more is the fact that this over-under is at 36.5. I go with the over because I think Vegas' offense will be better than they were last week. And Myles Garrett is banged up. I'm not sure how much he's going to play. He's a huge loss for that Browns defense. And I don't think Vegas' defense is very good either. So I think this goes over. It's going to be something around 24-20. There's going to be 40 points scored at least. Take the over in the Vegas Browns game in Vegas.
Wow.
Take the over, baby. Wow. It's 36.5.
I like that.
Tell them Squid Billy sent you.
It's weird when you keep talking about Vegas as a team instead of just they're the ones making the odds in this. I'm like, Vegas sees it as a tune. Oh, wait, no, we're talking about team. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I did mix my Vegases in there, so if you did get confused, I think Vegas, the bookies, think that Vegas.
The team.
Raiders.
Now, I'm confused. As a home team, you're a 3-point favorite at home for a pick 'em game. Falcons are a 2.5-point favorite. Does that make them a half-point underdog, technically? I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it means
this is even.
You know what it means? Vegas doesn't have a freaking clue.
Like I said, 111th meeting between the Falcons and Saints. Both teams have won 55. Taysom Hill is playing. He might do something to annoy the fan base and strike fear in our hearts. Falcons. Emotional victory.
Let's go.
Over the Saints. They're going to win this one 23-21.
Woo!
And the tubas will be quieted. The Hoodat Nation tubas, yes, thank you.
Woo!
And we're going to celebrate. Come by the Signia by Hilton for the Falcons flyover around 6 o'clock Sunday and buy me a shot.
Let me tell you something. I might stop by there so you can buy me one on my way home.
I was going to say maybe me too, but I have to work.
Well, I'll be getting off at that point of work. So I'll be leaving the locker room. I might come by for a post-game shot with Robbie T.
Maybe I'll bring Goforth with me over there. You know what I mean? Just drag him along.
Hey, his Iowa State Cyclones are ranked what? Number 19, I believe? 20 or something? They're ranked.
Illinois is 19, so we'll have to check where they are.
That's right. Illinois is 19, but Iowa State is. Well, at any rate, David Archer, Falcons analyst, former Falcons quarterback, 18. They are 18. Thank you, Garrett. And coming back, setting up this interview, Earl Campbell's final carry in the NFL on December 20th. 1985 against the Atlanta Falcons, and it was kind of a sad ending for him. That's coming up next. Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Welcome back to the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Falcons, Saints getting ready to meet for the 111th time. Both teams have won 55 games. And a quarterback for a couple of those affairs, our own David Archer. Arch, good morning, sir.
How you doing, buddy? Good to be with you on a Saint week. Love it.
Yes, sir.
He never lost to the Saints, by the way.
I know. Well, I've got a point about that. Arch, I was December 22nd, 1985. You guys play the Saints. You get the victory. I believe 16-10. Earl Campbell's final game, final carry. Wendell Kaysen strips him of the ball. It appeared that Earl Campbell's going to score a touchdown. They play. Pulls up lane with a hamstring. Last time Earl Campbell ever carried a football in an NFL game.
Wow, great call, Rob. You talk about digging into the annals. Yeah, I can visualize it right now. I can see it right now. There was a play in that game where we had the ball, I think, third, and we were on about our own 19-yard line. It was third and about five, and I got pushed out of the pocket to the right and scrambled all the way back to our sideline on the left. They tracked it that I ran 75 yards to throw a ball to Alma Matthews. Remember Alma Matthews?
I do remember Alma Matthews.
He got the first down, and we extended the drive, yeah.
Aren't you glad we got to mention Wendell Kaysen and Alma Matthews today?
There you go, yeah. Alma Matthews went on to be a referee in the SEC. Sure did.
Dave, I want you to answer a question for me that I don't know if any quarterback has ever given me a straight answer on. And I know how this feels as an offensive lineman when there's an injury situation and you have to step in and you have a couple of, possibly a couple backups up front. Both quarterbacks will be dealing with that this weekend. As a quarterback, when you have a backup lineman that's starting in front of you or multiple backup linemen starting in front of you, is that something that is in the back of your mind when you're taking your dropbacks, or are you just simply like, you know what, man, go up there and do your job, I'll read the coverage?
Well, certainly, Mike, you're aware of it during the week. But I think that once the game starts, I don't think you think about who's where. The one caveat to that would be the center position, which is what we're going to see this weekend. And Ryan Neuzel will step in and play for Drew Dahlman, as we know. And so I thought Neuzel struggled some. And Dahlman's not a dominant interior player either, but I thought he struggled a little bit. He'll be better this week, having gotten to play last week. This will only be his fifth career start. He's played in some 26, 27 games in his NFL career. But that would probably be the only time that I'd be aware of it as a quarterback, that my center's different. Because for whatever reason, there's nuances to those guys. Some guys are lower, some guys are higher. Sometimes you got to get your hands further underneath. It just
got to get intimate with those guys, Arch. You got to get.
Yeah, exactly right. Some of them want a little pat on the ass before you go ahead and do it. I mean, you got to be tender with some. Some you got to kick in the butt. So yeah, those guys are a little different. But I don't think so, Mike. I think you just kind of go through the week knowing that there's some new guys in there, and you try to help them as best you can. And remind some backs, especially for Storm Norton, hey, let's make sure we're chipping on the way out. These guys have some guys that can rush the passer, Carl Granderson, and some of these guys can rush the passer. So just remind some of the backs to help out a little bit. But I think you just line up and go play.
The fact that Neuzel snaps his left hand, is that a big deal?
It can be, Rob, if he twists the ball or anything. Most centers snap the ball nose straight into your hands. And so you don't turn the ball anymore. It used to be back in the day, the center would turn the football and slap it up that way. Now the nose of the football comes up and you take it that way. So it doesn't really matter how it's coming up. As long as your top hand is receiving the threads and you can rotate it to your hand to be ready to throw, that's the key.
Arch, you mentioned their defensive line. Brian Brzee is having his best year so far as a pro. I mean, it was only his second year, but he's really kind of coming to his own. But then Carl Granderson as well. It used to be Cam Jordan was the guy we worried about. And I don't even mention Chase Young, because to me, he's not a guy I'm overly concerned about. It's Granderson and Brzee. How do they basically neutralize these guys, or can they?
Well, as soon as you start trying to forget about Cam Jordan, he's going to have a sack against you. And Cam Jordan, as we know, all the numbers that are attached to him playing against Atlanta, in 26 games, he's got 23 sacks. I know a lot of that was against Matt Ryan, but you got a very similar quarterback playing for the Falcons. And so you can bet that Jordan will have his ears bent back and be ready to crank up it when he hears that he's going to be in Atlanta. So don't discount Cam Jordan. But it's like every week, Bo. This is not something different. I mean, we've seen guys each and every week that you're going to face that are fire breathers coming off the edge. And so you find a way, to mix things up on them. You got to make them play the run. We've got to be better in the run game. You can't just let them think it's going to be a pass game all day long. We got to be better on first and second down to put a little bit a doubt in their minds, because those guys have to be able to defend the run. And if they're not having to do that, if we're in third and long all the time, yeah, Granderson and Breezy are going to start thinking about what move they want to use and what's their counter move, and they're going to be rushing the pass. They're not going to be thinking about run game. So those are all the things you need to do. You got to mix it up on them to make sure they can't just hone in on some of their techniques and get after you.
Arch, earlier in the show, we were kind of breaking down the looks you might get defensively, and the Falcons are in cover three almost as much as anybody in the NFL. And on the flip side, Derek Carr been actually pretty good against cover three, thrown for a couple of touchdowns. Walk people through some of the ups and the downs of being in a cover three defense and how teams try to attack that defense.
Well, you've got soft corners, Mike. That's the number one thing that comes to mind to me. If teams are playing cover three, and cover three, if you don't know, and I'm sure Mike's explained it, but you got three guys that are responsible for the three deep thirds of the field. So corner, safety, corner are responsible for thirds of the field all the way to the goal line, which means they're not going to come up and press. Now, you might get some press bail, meaning they'll come up, look like it's going to be press coverage, and they'll turn their rear into the sideline and get out of there. Because remember, they got to defend all the way to the goal line. So they've got to get out of there so they don't get run by. So the key to that is there should be some opportunities for Carr to throw the ball underneath. We saw Patrick Mahomes utilize that. When you get zone coverage, you can't. They're trying to keep the ball in front of them. So what you got to do is you've got to take what they give you. And on first down passing, you've got to make sure you go ahead and get that 4, 5, 6 yards to keep yourself in these manageable situations we're talking about. So that's what it lends itself to. Now, what it takes away, it's supposed to take away the deep shots. It's supposed to take away their ability to throw down the ball down the field. Now, this is a team in the Saints. You guys have been talking about it all week. They've been blowing the top off coverages. Rashid Shaheed can run. Chris Olave is as good as there is in that intermediate stuff, and he can get deep as well. But, you know, those two guys running those deep over routes and complementing with deep post routes, you're trying to take that away with the cover three. So you're going to give away some stuff underneath, but you're hoping to take away the deep shots.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd take away the deep shot arcs. Let's put Derek Carr on the turf a few times. Look, we haven't done that enough. We've had some pressures, but we haven't gotten the quarterback down enough. We haven't gotten turnovers enough. But the main thing that worries me about our defensive front right now is the being gashed in the run game. And we've got another good running back. Looks like a 2017-18 version of Alvin Kamara. What do our guys up front got to do? And I'm talking about Onyemata and Goldman and Grady. I thought Taquan Graham had his best game of the year last week. But what do we got to do up front to slow them down and get them in some third and longs where we can have time to get to Derek Carr?
Yeah, it's not as much about the run game, or it's not as much about the running back, Bo, as it is the offensive line. Yes, Kamara's a good back, but you're going to face a pretty good back every week. That's the way it is in this league. How can you attack their offensive line? What are their protections? What are the run blocking schemes? Are you dialed in on some of that? Some of it's going to take going away from what Mike's talking about. In cover three, that means those linebackers are playing at depth. They'll step to take away play action, but then they're dropping into zones. You may need to go to some more man coverage. We may need to flood them, need to run blitz them, run dog them with Troy Anderson and Caden Ellis in the interior to blow up their blocking schemes. Nothing blows up blocking more than penetration. So you've got to turn some guys loose, let guys get in gaps and blow through. But I think more than anything else, it's about bringing more to the dance against the run game than they can block. And I think Atlanta will have to try to do some of that. And some of it's just you're going to have to bow your back and be more physical. I thought Atlanta got pushed around in the interior some. Some of those guys are going to have to bow up a little bit. But I think more than anything else, it's going to have to be, again, mix up your looks and make sure that they're blocking schemes. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to affect the offensive line. He's only going to run to daylight. But if there's no daylight, then that's the problem. So what you're going to try to do is blow up their blocking schemes and get after their guys up front.
Arch, I got a philosophical, theoretical football question for you. The notion of accuracy with quarterbacks, do you either have it or you don't? Is it innate? I know you can sit there and polish your mechanics and fundamentals and try to duplicate your release, just like a pitcher does as well, but some pitchers have command or they don't. Is accuracy innate or can it be coached?
No, I think you can work on it, Rob. I think that there's some guys that just have an innate ability to be pinpoint with the ball. Some of it has to do with their motion. If you've got a long arm motion, if there's a lot of movement in the arm, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. It's like a golf swing, you know, a long golf swing.
Randall Cunningham is what I think of.
Exactly right. Randall had a he looked – now, the ball came out of his hand. We used to call his arm a buggy whip because it just would go down near his hip, get back, and then cock and throw. And the ball would come out. Because his motion was so long, he thought, okay, well, he's going to be in trouble. But the ball came out with so much velocity that he made up for how long his motion was. But he struggled some with some accuracy. Now, some of those guys that have longer motions are better on deep shots. The guys that have the shorter motions are a catcher, like a catcher coming up to throw the ball to second base.
Right.
You get that shorter motion, your accuracy is pretty good underneath. So, you know, but I think the experience, getting the ball out on time, you know, knowing the idiosyncrasies of a receiver's routes when they know they're going to come out of breaks, gives you an idea of get the ball out at a certain point in a certain location because you know how they come out of their breaks. I think that's some of what's going on maybe with Kirk and some of his receivers that seems to starting to develop. I talked to him a little bit about this week, is it seems to be coming each and every week. Just him knowing what guys do at the top of their routes. There's little hints and things. I remember Billy White Shoes Johnson. You could read him like a book. When he got to, for me, not the DB, but as soon as he got to the top of the route, I had this little wiggle that I was watching for. And as soon as I saw the ball came out, because I knew. And some guys don't have that. They'll roll out of the routes, and so you're late with the ball. That creates accuracy problems. So it's on the receiver a little bit as well.
Arch, real quick. Last game yesterday for the A's at Oakland Alameda Coliseum. I know you grew up in that area for a little bit of your life, your early life. Is there a memory that from Oakland Alameda with the A's there, watching the A's play?
Well, there's a lot of memories. California Gold, Kelly Green, wedding gown white, and on Sunday, Vita Blue. You know, it was phenomenal to be able to go there. But I saw Reggie Jackson. I was in person. Reggie Jackson hit a ball against the Red Sox that went into – the left center field gap, and the ball hit the wall, and Tony Coniglio was playing center, and he ran into the wall and knocked himself out. And it was old wooden walls back in those days, Rob. You remember those days?
Yeah.
He hit the wall, and he goes down. The ball kind of careened off his body back towards center field. He was playing center. So now the right fielder and the left fielder are trying to get to the ball, and Reggie could run back in the day.
He could, yep.
And he was digging, and he gets the clock at third base to go ahead and go, and the ball's coming in. And as he steps on third base and heads down the line, this guy looks like a hippie, jumps out of the crowd and runs and steps on the third base bag. And now he's about 6 feet behind Reggie running down the line. Reggie dives as the throw comes in. Throw goes by and goes to the backstop. Reggie slides across the plate on his stomach, and the crowd's going wild. This dude behind him dives on the ground and slides across the plate too. And when he stood up, Reggie was standing there and said, "Give me 10," and they slapped hands. The police came out on the field and escorted this dude off the field. They handcuffed him and took him off the field. It was classic, man. I was like 8 years old. I said, "No, man, this is awesome. This is great."
God bless. All right, so let's go get a win on Sunday, and let's keep those they always bring tubas to hoot at people. Let's keep those tubas quiet.
This is, guys, this is one of the more important, one of the most important early season games I can ever remember.
Right.
Divisional opponent coming in, another one coming in on Thursday, and we've lost two at home. Man, what an important game for Atlanta to go get.
All right, Arch, we appreciate you, man. Have a good call on Sunday, and let's get a win, brother. All right, you want to go to Dega, baby?
Yeah.
October 4th.
Dega!
It's Dega, baby. Family four-pack for that October 4th race. Seventh caller, 404-726-0929. You get to go to Dega.
Talladega!
Dega, baby! What you got, Squid?
We're actually going to talk about some the A's final game and how one ESPN Major League Baseball analyst, one of the best in the business, who he blames for what's happened in Oakland. Next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app!
That's right! Back here on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This is The Life of Squid, brought to you by the W Sauce and New Realm Brewing Company, official craft beer partner for Kennesaw State Athletics. Hoo-da-hoo! Also, don't forget, guys, November 25th, Brown Grass Charity Classic for Pets for Vets. It'll be at my club, Eagle Watch. It's November 25th. You can sign up today. All you got to do, go to the 92.9 The Game webpage, Mike. Click on the events page, Rob. And click on the link to sign up today and play some golf. Be a part of Squid Nation, Mike's Mafia, and maybe play with your favorite 92.9 The Game host.
Or Rob's Rejects.
Or least favorite host, whichever one.
Such a good name, Rob. It's such a good name.
It really is. Okay. Mike, I don't like to do things, and your wife has already hijacked my segment once this week, but I wanted to give you a moment to give her a special message.
Yeah, it is my wife's birthday today, and hopefully she's enjoying some time with the kids right now, not too swamped. She doesn't have to work today, so happy birthday to my beautiful wife, Lindsay. Hope you're having a good one.
That's very nice. Thank you for that. Happy birthday, Lindsay.
Thanks for giving me
that. Yeah, man, from all of us at Squid Nation, because we've seen how Mike's Mafia treats you.
Yeah, she might be in the nation, actually.
She may or may not.
She might be.
We may or may not have sent a shirt to your address.
She'd do it just out of spite. There's no.
I know she would. That's what I love about her. We got Arch's memory from Oakland as an Oakland A's fan from Oakland. It's called the Coliseum. I call it Oakland Alameda Coliseum, and it's been a lot. They're moving to Vegas. But not this year.
Sacramento.
They're going to play in a AAA stadium. And the owner, John Fisher, has allowed this. Let's take a listen to what the final radio play-by-play sounded like yesterday as the game ended and Oakland won their final game at Oakland Alameda Coliseum.
It is over after 57 years of thrills, of heartbreak, but always a sense of community, of fans belonging to something bigger, something special. It was baseball. It was Oakland A's baseball that brought so many people together. There's, a profound sense of loss of Bert, and yet the memories hopefully will last forever. May those memories be a blessing.
Very dramatic, but I think that was very well done.
I agree.
By Oakland's radio.
Yep, I like that, man.
Obviously, radio is the best medium to listen to sports. And Ken, I don't want to butcher his name, but I believe it's Ken Korick. It did a phenomenal job of that. You know, I was listening. I was driving up yesterday. I went up and saw my Dr. Joe Crisman, my chiropractor. And so I go up to Buford to see him. He worked for the Falcons for years. And I was listening to the Steakhouse. And they had Buster Olney on, who's one of my favorite baseball guys. Like, I love hearing Buster talk about baseball. I think he does such a phenomenal job. And he blamed not just the A's owner, John Fisher, but he blamed all of the owners in baseball for allowing something like this to happen and for not holding each other accountable.
I blame the other 29 owners that they don't hold each other to higher standards.
Yep.
I always tell people all the time that Major League Baseball, you can't think of it as one business. It's a confederacy of 30 private businesses. And the other 29 businesses at some point should step up and say, this situation is an embarrassment. You should be staying in Oakland until you get a better ballpark deal someplace else. And we sure as hell are not going to have games in a AAA park in 2025 in Sacramento. But guess what, guys? Because these owners do not hold each other to account, that's where we are.
And I'll take it a step further. They also should hold him accountable the way him and the guy down in Miami with how they run the new owner down in the old group in Miami with how they run their teams. The fire sale stuff, I understand what a small market team means. I understand all of that. But there is a way to do business, and then there is just absolute. This is like basically running like cell phone stores are not corporate. Some of them are independent franchises.
Yeah.
And it's like grooming an employee and getting them to be your top salesman and then selling them to a corporate store so they can go make money for the bigger corporate possible company,
yeah,
and then you now you
got
to restart every year, and then your customers suffer. It's ridiculous. Right. I Buster Olney nailed it, and I'm glad that he has the testicular fortitude to step up and say that when he does rely on some of these owners to get a lot of information.
All right, we got Chris from Carrollton and D'Angelo from Jonesboro going to Dega, baby.
Dega,
baby.
Dylan said that brother's fired up to go to Dega. That's cool.
Let's go.
That is cool.
Let's go.
Congratulations, y'all. We're going to come back.
Beep, 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 beep.
Hand it off to the Steakhouse. And this hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Man, if you live in Florida, you might be thinking strongly about Mark Spain Real Estate. Bless your hearts down there. Isolated flooding around it. The metro area as well. Apparently the wind's going to kick up as well, so be careful out there, everybody. This is Sports Radio 1990 Game.